So, good day to you. Welcome to Virtual Machines. Today, I'm going to try to finish the part on the translation of a C-like language. So, we're going to try to round it up with finishing with the function calls and then have a look at how we can translate a whole module of C code. And that should be it. So, let's have a look. Maybe a short remark to where we have left last time with a little bit of confusion. There was this part of translating this very nice example here with the with first of all a riddling declaration. So now that I had 20 seconds more than before, this thing was missing, so if I put just an explain before my declaration, this will actually really give me a verbose form of that declaration. So that for one. And the other thing was that we were riddling about how to really cope with address arithmetics, and remember, we had the problem of how to deal with this little friend over here. And I had a short talk to Helmut about that, and he agrees that this was kind of dirty on the slides so far. So what was missing was an idea of how to actually really perform arithmetics on pointers, and the translation scheme is kind of similar to what you have already seen to array express array accesses via an index. So coming to an expression like this one, where let's just say that the pointer type is one in E1. If we meet something like this, then so E1 has the type of a pointer or an array type, then we don't just do a plain addition of numbers, but instead we, of course, first of all, we compute both of these numbers and then perform a multiplication of this last thing to scale it to the size of the data type that E1 points to in order to perform that thing. And then in the end, we will fire an add or a sub on that thing, and this will then do the job. So this would have been the missing template to generate code for, and this will then work out to be compatible with the things that you find over here in these examples. So these were parts that were clearly missing, so sorry about that. That should now fill in all the holes that we had. Okay. So this were a few things that we missed last time. Now let's go back to a place near the thing where we have left off. We were talking about actually performing function calls, and we established that there would be the terms of calling and entering, while calling would be the part that the caller does, while as entering is the part that the callee has to do at the start of a function call. And then there's the process of when function call returns. There's also two parts to be done here by the caller and the callee. So the callee is the one who exits, and and has to do according stuff there. And then when we leave, we will give control back to the caller, who then also has to do a few things. So we had a look at what needs to be done in order to perform a function call from F to G. And just to kind of recall and give us a common base, let's go through that again to remember what we have seen there. So there was first of all the evaluation of the parameters to be done. Remember, we had established that due to certain properties of the input language, we need to evaluate from right to the left so that we find the parameters in a pleasing way on the stack. So That is the first thing to do, evaluate the actual parameters. Then there's a little bit of management things to do. So these are internal procedures, saving the frame pointer and the extreme pointer. Since these are registers that we don't have really access to, there's a convenience instruction, like this mark here, which is called after the actual parameters have been evaluated. Then we continue providing code to determine the start address of G, which will allocate another stack cell. And after that is done, again, there is management registers to be set or accessed in some way. And that is, again, a thing that we delegate to the implementation of the virtual machine, like setting the new frame pointer, saving the current program counter, and set it to the address that we have computed a step earlier. And this is all done in one convenience instruction called call. And with that, we are done with the part that can be done by the caller, F. Now there is the introduction to the method G, and there we quickly set the extreme pointer, the extreme pointer to its new value, and we can do so with the convenience method enter, and then allocate space for the actual local variables. That is also a thing that we don't directly do, but instead delegate to the virtual machine. And with that, we are done with everything that the callee has to do in order to start actual computation. To the contrary, when we return from a method call, there's also things to be done. First of all, we generate the actual return value on top of the stack and leave it there. Then there is the where is then found by the return instruction. Also, the return instruction will restore the frame pointer and the extreme pointer from the stack frame before. And then we will actually perform the jump back to the caller by simply resetting the program counter to its old value, which results then in just the next instruction being loaded from the address that we put into the program counter. Thus, we jump back to the thing. And this is all done by just one return instruction by the callee. So this is a thing that comes from G. The other thing that is then necessary is, remember, the caller has put an arbitrary number of parameters on the stack, and the callee wasn't actually aware of how many there actually really are. So now the it remains to the caller to actually really clean up the top of the stack and remove every parameter that he has put on there, except for one, the topmost cell, where a convention says that we find the actual result of the computation. So this is what this slide thing will be about. And oh, nice. And this is to be done by the caller, and thus that part. So, in terms of actual generation of code, we now have the part of the caller. So, this part fused together with this part, which will end up in the code generation scheme that we see here, where we come from the actual calling expression, which will then result in this chain of things that we had to do that we can see from the previous slides. So first of all, evaluation of the parameters in right to left fashion. So we start from EN, go back to E1, Then there's the management cells being saved to the stack. This is done by Mark. Then we leave the continuation address, which is the start address of the function on top of stack, by evaluating the actual expression for that. Then we perform the actual call, which consists in exchanging the top of the stack with the current program counter, or at least sort of. I think the PC goes a little bit deeper, but that's what the call does. And then control is conceptually delegated to somewhere else, to some function, which is then executed. And at some point, the function is supposed to call its own return, which will then find the old saved program counter from here and restore it to the program counter again, which will lead to control going back to there and continuing with the slide routine, which then cleans up the top of the stack again. So that's generally the concept for the caller. So what we have realized last time for that is that this is actually a call by value parameter passing fashion that we have identified here. So the parameters are actually really evaluated and their values are given, not their addresses. So if we would have languages with other semantics, we'd have to change a little bit for that. Then what else is there to say? Well, this function, we generally imagine this thing to be a function name, but it not necessarily has to be so. Instead, it could also be an expression whose R value actually points to the start address of the called function. And a thing maybe which is kind of a peculiarity of the way that C handles function pointers is you define function pointers that can keep starting addresses of functions in the way that you see here. And if you then decide to actually really perform the calls on these variables, you may see them being called like this or like this, and it turns out that both of these things are to be considered equivalent in C. And that is maybe a little bit weird, but for us it has kind of just one consequence. Like, we catch that with a special case, in case that we find the dereferentiation on a function pointer we just pass through with our code generation into the actual expression of the, which is to be dereferenced. So it just doesn't have any effect on our code generation to have this dereferentiation operator. So apart from that, if we directly call via function name, we have this part of the code generation where the function is just used to load constant. As far as I remember, we have introduced that in a fashion that this would look up this underscore, didn't we? I don't really remember how we said earlier. Or is that just the label that denominates the address? That could also be. So maybe that's just rubbish, and the thing that comes back is kind of a number that is is aliased by this underscore F thing. I think that's probably more what's actually happening. Another thing is that you might find a structure being given as an actual parameter, and in order to do so, we somehow need the concept of a value to produce in this call by value scheme. In order to do that on structures, which we usually handle via addresses, we need some code R function on structs. And this is something that we find here. So the code R for E, in case E is a structure, will be newly introduced instruction. So there's this move K, and what that will do is we assume that the pointer given at the top of the stack whenever move k is issued will lead to the k many cells pointed to by the top of the stack being replicated on the stack. So this moves the complete value, so to say, of a structure in the cells at the top of the stack. So this will then replicate this idea of calling by value. What still misses is the special purpose instructions that are issued during the function call. So for that we had established an instruction that we have called mark. And all that that did was, after we had evaluated the parameters, we would want to save the current values of the frame pointer and the extreme pointer to the stack. So mark is defined as exactly that. This emanates from frame pointer and extreme pointer to have particular values that are then replicated at the top of the stack. So that's just straightforward, I would say. Then the actual call was the thing that was added to the sequence after we had evaluated the actual address of the method to call. So this means that on top of the stack we find the address of the method to call. And just by the way, a little bit under that is these two pinkish cells, which are the old EP and the old FP. So that's just a side note there. So a call then would be defined like from this situation with the start address there, which would have to, in the end, go to the program counter, while the program counter, which would be the point to the address following the call, which is in that sense the returning address, this would have to go into the stack frame to designate the continuation point for the computation. And after the call is executed, control will be delegated to the actual function via this thing over here. And this is just an ordinary swap that is happening here. So you see this implementation via the temp thing. So this is what the virtual machine would have to do. The remaining new instruction that we have introduced is the slide operation, which we used when we return from a function in order to clean up our stack. So slide there has a parameter that tells it how many parameters there have been and have to be cleaned away. And yeah, well, this is the situation in which it is meant to be used. So and on top of the stack is the resulting value. So there is just a value that has to somehow be the new top of stack. But what we really don't want to be there, don't want to have there, is everything that is beyond there. This is just temporary actual parameters that don't play any role anymore, because we already come from executing that particular function, and we don't need that anymore. So we would like for the return value to go there and discard everything above. So that is what the slide does. Return value then goes there and everything else disappears. So again, there's a temp variable used, and the stack pointer is just decreased, and then the top of stack is written anew. So that is the parts that we have somewhat already seen last time. So now let's have a look at what the callee is supposed to do. And for that, we have a new code generation scheme for the definition of a function. So in case that we match something like this, so code generation for this fellow over here will, what does that consist of? That is a return type, there's the name of the function, there's parameter specification, there's variable definitions, declarations, I would rather say, and the remains of that block. So this is kind of emanating from a typical NZC-like function declaration where the local variables have to go in front of the rest of the block. You could somehow find an extension so that the compiler helps you in providing the actual function definitions, so that you can grab them directly from your syntax tree representation. So that's not necessarily a real letdown here to have it in that way. So with a little bit of help of the compiler, you can always get this information that you need here. So, in terms of what to generate for which part, we have the function name that is directly used as the identifying label for this part of the code. So the, this is this underscore f, which is kind of an alias for some concrete address that is returned by the address environment later on. So this goes there. Then we have the specification of formal parameters. Where do they go to? Well, these provide some information about addressing later on in the translation of the concrete statements and expressions within the block of the thing. So this specs thing isn't directly represented right now over here, but it goes into the information that is used to generate code for variables that we find within statements and expressions. So that goes into the address environment that is given to the code generation for the block. That's not the only part that goes there. Instead, also the variable declaration part over here also contributes to changes of that thing. So that goes also into the address environment for the function, as well as, well, there's information about global variables and other functions that have been specified already, be it in actual specifications or just prototypes, and those do also contribute to this thing. So this row F here is constructed out of the old row and will be updated with information from the parameter specifications and the local variable specifications. And they somehow overshadow all the declarations that have been given in row, in the sense that if we have same identifiers, then the ones from the parameter specifications as well as the local variables have precedence over the other ones, and in that sense overshadow the others. So you do updates to this map temporarily for creating code for the block, and afterwards you continue with the old map. But that is topic for the compiler construction itself. So these are which ones have you already handled? So this one, this one, this one, and kind of this one. So what else is there? There's, of course, the actual statements. We go in there, of course. And I've missed one thing. The actual variable definitions have another use. So apart from just contributing to the address environment for that function, of course, this also contributes into, well, actual usage of stack. So remember, we had the formal parameters organized underneath the cell that was pointed to by the frame pointer, and the local variables organized above this cell. So far in our constructions here, we haven't really tackled the space of the, that is used for the local variables, but this still needs to be done. So that is what the VDEFs also contributes to. So this goes into this part here, this alloc, which is there to allocate the space for the local variables, of course. So this one is fed by the size of the data types in the variable declarations. So that's where this alloc comes from. Then we said that the statements by themselves contribute, of course, to the code generation for the statements. Well, that's true. However, there's still another thing that we need to take care of, and that is particularly this idea of detecting whenever stack overflow occurs. Remember? That was what we wanted to do. And for that, we need to somehow make sure that whenever we call a function, we of course increase the space on stack that is going to be used, and that is something that is determined by the statements that are occurring within the block of a function. So these statement sequences SS over here will lead to a certain amount of stack cells being used as temporaries for evaluating expressions. So that is a thing that has an influence, or should have an influence, on our extreme pointer. So there is also a connection from SS to Q over here. And turns out that there are methods that you can apply to, at compile time, analyze the sequence of statements that you are given here, that come up with a constant integer that you can use for initializing the extreme pointer. This is a thing that you can quite easily try to do yourself. It's just, well, you can imagine this SS thing being given in form of kind of a tree structure. So you can just run through that with a depth first search, and you somehow have, well, the amount of temporary stack cells is somewhat linked to the depth in which expressions are nested into each other, since they at some point need intermediate results being stored on the stack. So the nesting depth has something to do with that, and when you traverse through that thing, you can sum up all the intermediate result cells that are needed. You can take the maximum whenever you have sequences of statements that you find, and in that way you can come up with an actual number giving that. I think this is not going to be shown directly here, but maybe that is part of the tutorial. Let's see. So anyway, that is the statement sequence, and I think with that we have already kind of talked about everything that is given here. So let's just continue with the semantics of the few remaining instructions. So we said that there would be the extreme pointer that needs to be increased to a new value depending on the nesting depth of expressions in the statement body. in the body of the function, and for that purpose we need a function to actually write to the extreme pointer, and we do that with this special purpose instruction, enter q, which will take a constant compile time constant value and point the extreme pointer to the current top of stack plus whatever has been given to the enter routine. And well, in terms of semantics in the virtual machine, this is clearly not so difficult. So it's stack pointer plus q, and then there's the actual detection for Stack Overflow that happens here. And in this case, we, instead of returning zero, we can't really return anything here because there's no facility in the high-level language that really catches the situation. There is no counterpart to something like the enter over here. So this will actually really lead to a runtime error that you might have already seen on your machine, depending on how much you have written code in C that does recursion, for example. So that is Stack Overflow that happens at exactly that position. What goes into the enter is not simply just the depth of the expressions, but this this sum of the maximum length of the local stack, this nesting depth related thing, plus the actual size of the local variable, since at that point where we use this enter queue, we don't we haven't so far allocated space for the locals, and since we work on the top of stack pointer here, we still need to add this number beforehand. After that, remember, there's this alloc k that we do in order to save to reserve space for the local variables, and this is kind of an easy thing. This is just incrementing the stack pointer by the right amount, which is the size of the locals, and yeah, then we're done. So that's not too difficult to do. The only thing that remains now to be done is the manipulation of the control such that the function returns to its original continuation address before it had been called, and delivers its return value to there. And well, usually you, what is happening is that the we issue this return thing. So it's already green. So that is the instruction that happens like this. Yeah. So with that, the situation is the one from here. So this is initially the case. So we have a program counter that has reached the end of the program. We have an old extreme pointer that won't do much effect anymore, and the frame pointer that points to this now. At the end of its lifetime frame. And well, what this originally pointed to was the spots where a few of the saved registers from the caller have been placed into. So the three cells that are directly found at and beneath the cell pointed to by the frame pointer are the old program counter, the old frame pointer, the old extreme pointer. So all that a return has to do is to fiddle with the machine such that these values return to their original places, which had been for this p value. This had to be entered into the program counter. The e value has to be entered into the ep. And this thing over here goes to where the frame pointer had been. And that is then already all there is to do. Yeah. So in terms of what that means for semantics of the program, for the runtime is I actually don't really know why that is still in there. That should have been already a thing before. I don't know whether that actually really does something at any time, because usually whenever the new pointer is called, this is already compared to an EP that has already been higher beforehand, so this usually shouldn't trigger at all in that space. I would guess this is just not needed anymore. I can't imagine any... Oh well, maybe the extreme pointer of the old thing had been so high that it now collides with the new pointer. Well, that would be the only condition that I see where this is actually really a thing. So, okay, maybe. So if the old EP had been even higher than the intermediate Collies EP, then this really triggers a Stack Overflow. Yeah. So maybe it's okay to leave it in. Apart from that, that's just the resetting of the program counter, the extreme pointer, and the stack pointer and frame pointer. So that's just that. So now that we have seen how the actual function call is meant to be executed, and that we have talked about the scheme in which we would want to address names depending on whether they occur as globals or locals, there's still one thing to talk about, particularly the way that we have dealt with variables. In the expression handling that we had before, we had implicitly thought of addresses being always constants that we can look up in our memory representation. However, with the way that we generate code for functions now, we have two ways of storing variable. There's the local variables, of course, and the global variables. And they are accessed in different ways. One of them is just plain address lookup. The other one is looking up an address relative to some base register, which is, for our purposes, the frame pointer. So in order to come up with addresses destined for reading values and having destinations for stores, we now need to adapt our code generation scheme for variables to these new things. So our code L code generation for names is now twofold, depending on however the variable name has been tagged in the address environment. So in case it has been tagged as a global, which would be this case over here, we can still use our old code generation scheme of just loading constant addresses. However, now we have introduced local variables. This then means that there is also tagged L in there. And for those, we would like to have a different scheme of addressing, which would be relative to the frame pointer. So we introduce a new instruction loadRC, which is, in terms of semantics, defined like this. So we have a constant compile time constant parameter J, which is taken and added to the current value of the frame pointer to be put on top of the pushdown. So not too difficult to implement as long as we have access to the frame pointer. So that's what the runtime is all about. And we already have a compile scheme for that. And similar as we have done for actual global variables with this load A and store A, we might desire to have instruction names to be used for the code R versions of our variable, and for that we can also introduce a relative addressing scheme for this load and store And we do so via this load R and store R, which are just load RC of constant and load or store, respectively, depending on whatever we want to actually really do. So, that is already all for addressing local variables. What still needs to be covered is the actual occurrence of the return statement in a sequence of statements. There is functions that actually have a return type and usually have to, at some point, have a return statement in the end of statement sequences. Or in the end of a control flow of a function. So we need some code code generation function to deal with these types of statements. And what they usually do is, well, I have somehow a little bit surpassed that quite quickly. There is this thing that the actual returning instruction, not the one from the high-level language, but the one from the SEMA, implicitly expects the returning value to be found beneath the management saving parts of the stack frame, which will then in the end up at top of the stack for the caller to clean up and reuse. So that is the place where the return value needs to go. However, while we have not yet reached this return instruction, so we are still in the actual real body of a function, what we work with is the part over here, which is the old top of the stack. So we somehow need to have some transfer between there and there. And that is what needs to be done to implement this return expression thing. So first of all, of course, the expression still in the old namespace needs to be evaluated. So this E thing gets evaluated with a code R. That has to be done anyway, so we can't really surpass that. And now all we need to do is move this value to the place where it actually really belongs to. And that for that, we can already reuse our fancy new store R instruction, which will store relative to the frame pointer by the index of -3, which would be three slots beneath the first management cell, which is the first parameter at some at the start of the function, but in the end it is reused as the place where to store the result. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do a store R -3 and then trigger the return afterwards. So with that, we are kind of feature complete for everything that we need to translate real functions. So let's maybe try it out with some kind of at least somewhat practical function. So this had been the example introducing functions. It's a faculty function with X parameter. It has explicit return statements in there. It has other faculty calls in there. It has actual control flow in there. So could be quite funny to see what that really does. So let's maybe step through what the parts now actually give us. So for if you find something like this, this acts as a kind of a function declaration in that sense. So there are certain things that go there anyway. So there's the introductory label, this underscore fac, to access this thing. Then there is the final return, which is probably this one over here. And then there's the two parts that are there for initializing the extreme pointer as well as the local variables. And, well, they are directly in front of the body with enter Q and log 0. Why log 0? Well, doesn't seem like there is an actual real local variable here, so log doesn't need to allocate anything. you might wonder why it is there at all, and that is why that is because, well, we are talking not about manually generated code, but this is kind of automatically generated code, and this just follows templates with just filling in all the holes that it has there, and there's just a template that has an alloc here, and well, works with anything, also with zero local variables, so that's how it's done there. So it's no optimization done at all, it's just plain stupid usage of templates. This might look unappealing in the first place, but there, later on in compilers or runtime engines, there is the concept of optimizing the code anyway. So the question is whether we should really bother at the place here where we try to get the translation schemes right with doing these kind of fiddly loophole optimizations, or whether we have a run afterwards anyway that cleans away everything that is unnecessary. So that is kind of the concept here. Just use simple templates for code generation and let the optimization passes and then remove everything that's not needed. For example, this alloc 0 would be a good candidate to just throw away anyway. So, that is for the frame of the function. So, the question is now what to do then. So, there's a statement sequence involved, which is corresponding to this thing over here. So this, of course, also carries with it its else branch. But first of all, this needs the condition to be evaluated. For that, we need the value of the parameter, which we find via frame pointer relative access. It's the first parameter, so it's -3, given by the address environment for the function, and we compare that to 0, which we load to the stack, do an actual comparison, and now jump depending on whether the thing has fulfilled or not, which is given by this jump 0. So this already covers that part of the function. So in case that the thing is non-zero, we will have to, what do we have to do? We have to generate return 1 code. And this is what we're going to do right after. So, 1, that is, well, first of all, this is what the return statement should be here. So, we evaluate the statement first with its expression that is bundled with it. So, it's the R code for 1, which is just load C of 1. And the return statement had a peculiarity. It would store the top of the stack in a place where we can reuse it as a return value. So that's what the store relative at -3 is all about. And then we would directly return. So this is the part that corresponds to the statement itself. Then there is, well, non-reachable because there is a return directly before, but in principle there's still one thing, which is this jump B that comes from the position of this return 1 as the true branch of an if-else, and this needs to jump over the else part at some point. So this is why we put the jump B in there. This is a thing that's not reachable anyway in the program code, so this is a similar candidate as this one to be removed by some optimization pass later on, but for pure stupid application of templates, this still remains in the code for now. The other part is the else part that is jumped to in case of 0 or false. So this goes to A, which we find over here, which by itself, what does it do? Well, it does the evaluation of this nice little expression over here in context of a return statement. So that works in, well, loading the parameter eagerly waiting for being multiplied with whatever comes behind. And this is now a more complex expression, because that now is a function call again. And this has one parameter, which we have to evaluate also. And the parameter is again given as an expression based on the first on the first parameter of the function itself. So this is this load relative minus 3. This is occurring in subtraction with 1. So this is the expression that is given as parameter to the internal function call. So with that, we have finished the parameter list of the function call, which has then has to be continued with a mark that would save the management registers. Now we have to generate the code for the actual called function, which is then given by just a name. So this is the load C of FAC. And then we will again issue a call that does a lot with internal things, like this an instruction that fiddles around with internal registers, which is this call thing. And now, after this call, we imagine that the actual function will then be called and at some point return. And there we have to, in principle at least, clean up our old actual parameters and only save the return value. Since we only had one parameter which occupied one cell, this is reused for the parameter anyway, so the slide will not do particularly much, actually nothing. So slide 0 is a void operation, which is again same as everything else before. This is as well as this, and this is a candidate for optimization later on, because simply does nothing. So, apart from these superfluous instructions, what else do we find here now? So now this is this has given us the result of the function application, and we still have this old value of x waiting for being multiplied to this result value. So this has been given here, this is the other parameter, and though they have to be multiplied with each other in order to themselves serve as a return value. So they are used in context of this return statement as the returning expression. So what we do is then we store them in the first parameter slot, and then perform the actual return. And with that, well, this jump had not been reachable. This and here we also have control that goes back to the beginning, so this thing also turns unreachable. So we now have kind of a lot of instructions that we can remove. So all of these are kind of meaningless. But still, since they originate from the templates that we use for translation, they will be generated anyway. So that is how a whole function is translated. Also, a function call is inside the expression of these things. Is there any particular question for that? So that's all for the functions themselves now. So let's have a look at how we can translate a whole program with the things that we have seen so far. So we are rapidly nearing the end of the treatment of C code. So before any program executes, we have kind of an initial situation for the involved registers. So stack pointer, frame pointer, and extreme pointer are invalid in that sense. The program counter is pointing directly to 0, and the new pointer is pointing to max. There is nothing on the heap yet. And we are given a program in the following form. There's variable definitions. either specified directly at the beginning or accessible from the syntax tree in a convenient fashion. And then there's n definitions of functions, and one of them is called the main function. So, in order to now translate this thing to a runnable piece of software, we then have the following scheme. So, the code for such a module with no address environment so far, how does that look? Well, there is, of course, the fractions of code that need to be generated for each of the functions, and all of them, I think, let me actually really think a little bit. I guess when we talked about, yeah, we would say that the labels are already there, so I think this is superfluous. So these nice little fellows here are already covered in the code generation for the functions. So consider them just as kind of helper things for you here. We already have them covered in the code generation for the functions themselves. So they do not really need to be reproduced here, but also I think they don't really do any harm. So there's the code generations for each of the functions. Then, apart from that, what else needs to be there? Well, for the local variables, we have already allocated space. So the things where we don't have allocated space so far is the global variables. So that's what we should probably do at some point. So that's why there is an alloc of k in there, while k is the size of the global variables. And in order to overcome the initialization with minus 1, I think there's also this plus 1 in there. So alloc of k plus 1. And if we alloc space on the stack, we should probably also adapt the extreme pointer. And that's what we do a little bit before. And please note that there is a higher constant added to this k. Why is that? That is because we are still missing a few things in there. Particularly, control flow demands that we directly start with our entry into the program, which is the main function. So we still need to do a little bit in order to call the main function. And while we do that, we might need a little bit of space on the pushdown again. And so it actually is. The we will do a mark in order to construct an initial frame for stack frame for the main function, and then compute the address of main, which is for our purposes just a constant of main, since it is the label for main, which needs well, the mark itself will add two stack cells on the pushdown, as well as the load C, and with that we have three more cells that we need with this entered thing. So then we perform the actual call, which will give control to main, and after main has been executed, we will slide away all the local variables, and just keep the return value of the main function. And with that, halt, and halt is a new instruction that we have just introduced for the translating the complete module. And yeah, this is just returning control to the operating system, terminating the runtime system, and returning the value at address 0, which is the return value of main. And with that, we have a code generation scheme for see completely done. Is there any remaining question on code generation for C related languages and Asima? No? Then let's have a sneak peek into what comes next, which would be the translation of functional programming languages. And I know that these kind of C-type languages are quite known to a lot of us, since they are often used for introductory courses. I don't know how familiar and really confident you are with functional programming languages, but since this is the topic of, well, the next few slides will all be about how to translate a functional language to some kind of low-level virtual machine. So I would advise you, if you're not familiar to functional programming languages, I will in the next few slides indicate what our fraction of functional programming language, what fraction of such a language we will use for translation, and I would advise you to kind of maybe refresh or establish a few initial ideas of what functional programming is based on the parts that we indicate that we will use here. So this would be highly appreciated, because you need to be aware of the actual semantics of these kinds of languages. So, translation of functional programming languages. Functional programming languages are, at least from what I have seen, for example, from the internals of OCaml, are, in terms of grammar that you have, for example, a lot smaller than what languages like C or Java or Python or something like that really has. So it's a quite concise language that we are looking at. Nevertheless, it's still quite interesting to see what it does. So for our purposes, it's still too large to show in just a few weeks how to translate the whole thing. So what we are not gonna treat right now, at least, is first of all side effects. Side effects are mainly a thing of other languages like the C-based ones, and we have seen what you usually have as techniques for side effects there. And to contrast that and to show what else you do, we will instead focus on like side effect-free or pure functions. Thus, this POOF, these are the pure functions. For now, we will also spare ourselves the treatment of data structures in functional languages, and also what we're not going to show right now is exceptions. So, what remains then of a functional language is what you see over here. So, this is kind of a basic grammar of our POOF. So, what is occurring in there? So, expressions are kind of the main component of functional programs for us, and these expressions consist of, well, there's basic values, abbreviated with B here. There might be values, there might be applications of operators of unary or binary sort, or even of ternary sort, like this one over here. There's function application, which is usually, in terms of grammar, just a sequence of expressions. Then there's function declaration, like this one here, which produces a function from parameters x0 to xk minus 1 to some other expression. There's let expressions that bind a particular expression to a name to be used in another expression. And then there's recursive bindings that can be reused in the expression that are used to define these things themselves, and those can be used in particular ways for several of these bindings before being used within the final expression E0. So again, as we have done for the schema, we just have one basic type, which is the integer for our purposes. And well, what can you do with a language like this? That's what you see in this example here. So this is the definition of the faculty function. You've seen the schema version a few slides ago. And well, what you usually do is you define something like a function, which in this case is a recursive one. So it needs to be defined with a let rec, since it uses its own name in its defining expression. And this is essentially a function declaration as its defining expression, which has one parameter, which maps to a ternary expression, which has the parameter evaluated for a condition expression and either returns the expression 1 or a multiplication expression, which then does another recursive call. So that's that. And this is then this name that we defined here is then used not only in its own body for recursion, but also in the sort of main expression after the in with this fac7. So this is kind of the sort of code that you might expect from a functional programming language. And the two main concepts for handling functions in functional programming are the call by value and the call by name principles. So call by value is kind of the thing that probably most of the ML programmers are kind of familiar with. So in SML, for example, what you do is you eagerly evaluate all the parameters of a function before you actually start interpreting the function itself. While as in call by name, as for example in Haskell, what you do is when you encounter a call to a function, you not evaluate the parameters themselves, but you take references to the things that have been bound to the, these names and transport them to their uses, if there are any, and only in the cases where you are finally really forcing the evaluation of a certain binding by a direct use with just direct values, then you start evaluating these things, and yeah, that's a kind of a crucial difference between those two. In call by name, in that sense, you don't really you might at certain points circumvent executing particular parameters evaluations in cases where control flow is in a way that you don't really use these parameters, for example. If you implement that in a kind of naive way, you might end up evaluating your parameters several times if you kind of don't remember to store the values for certain parameter bindings when you have encountered evaluation for these things for the first time. So you need to somehow cache the results for that, as long as there are still references around. So these are the two behaviors and the kind of grammar and features of languages that we are going to talk about in the next few lessons. So I'm going to stop here before we actually reach the architecture of our functional virtual machine and give you the opportunity, in case that you still need to refresh or initiate some knowledge about functional programming. So gonna finish a little bit early today. Sorry about that. But you have now the possibility to look at material for that yourselves. Please do so if you don't have any so far. And it would be also nice to refresh your knowledge in case that it has been already a few semesters that you have for the last time looked at a functional language. And with that, I would say good luck in that. Use the time, please. And next time, we're going to dive right into semantics of functional programming in a virtual machine for functional programming and the translation of the first few elements of our POOF language. So, have a nice week and see you next Monday. Thank you.